Do we have a quorum now?
Good morning, Chair. Yes, we do have a quorum.
Thank you very much. Honorable members, the committee is considering the responses by the Civilian Secretariat for Police on the public submissions received in terms of the draft protection of constitutional democracy against terrorists and related activities amendment bill that is currently before the committee. The department has consulted various stakeholders on the comments that were received during the public participation process, and we have sent a detailed, they have sent detailed responses on each comment made by the Banking Association of South Africa, 2 AfriForum, 3 the International Committee of the Red Cross, and 4 the Sussex Terrorism and the Extremism Research Network, STERN. The department has indicated that various comments should be considered by the committee for inclusion in the bill, such as the inclusion of an offense being committed not only for the receiving terrorist related training, but also providing terrorist related training, as was suggested by STERN. This illustrates the importance of public participation on legislation before Parliament, and undoubtedly strengthens the legislative process to allow our committee to improve its work. Public participation and involvement in the legislative process is central to the mandate of Parliament and is a constitutional requirement. The committee has raised concerns about the public participation process and requested that additional time should be allowed for public submissions. Despite the extension for public submissions to be submitted on the bill, the committee has not received any additional submissions. As such, the committee will adopt its report on public hearings during the following scheduled meetings. The committee welcomes back the representatives of AfriForum, STERN, and the ICRC, who have availed themselves for further engagements should the need arise. As I welcome all of you, I would like to welcome the participants from those organizations who made submissions to the committee last week. I will now take the apologies. The minister and the deputy minister have submitted apologies. Do we have any further apologies? I think Honorable Groenewald has also apologized. The minister will attend cabinet, and the deputy minister is attending the ICED, the Economic Cabinet Committee. They are also starting at 9 a.m. and we have a clash there. The acting secretary for police secretariat, Mr. Amaru, will lead the debates today. Do we have any further apologies? I know it's Dr. Groenewald and General Labia have also submitted apologies. Further apologies, General Meshu, you have your, Reverend Meshu, you have your hand up.
Chair, Majozi as well.
Yes, Majozi, Honorable Meshu, and then Majozi.
Yes, good morning, Chairperson, and all honorable members. I'll be attending PC on International Relations at 10:30.
Thank you, Honorable Meshu, Honorable Majozi, and then Honorable Wop.
No, thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. My apologies that I will leave the meeting at 12. I'll attend. We have interviews of SAPC in the communications committee, so I will leave at 12 if we are not done. Thanks, Chair.
Good luck for those interviews. Your apology is noted and accepted. Honorable Whip.
No, Chair, I don't have an apology.
Isn't this your hand up?
I think iPad is Shembeni, Chair.
Oh, Honorable Shembeni. Thank you, Honorable Whitfield.
Morning, Chair. Yes, I think I'll be having load shedding from 11.
Thank you, Honorable Shimbeni. Honorable members, do we have any further apologies? Babalwa?
Okay.
All right, thank you. Could we now have the agenda flighted before us, please? Sorry, we have to adopt the agenda. The deliberations, if we do not conclude the deliberations today, we'll continue with the deliberations. We do not need to rush the deliberations. Today we'll have the department responses. Do we have an adoption of the agenda?
I move, Chair.
Honorable Siabe moves for the adoption of the agenda. Do we have a seconder? Do we have a seconder for the agenda?
Honorable Shimbeni seconded.
Honorable Shimbeni seconds. Honorable members, on the matter of the minutes, on the 24th of August, when we started this, our meetings after the recess, we had a long input towards the end of our meeting, where amongst others, after that input towards the conclusion of the meeting, the committee decided that we should have a strategic session, which would be a physical session. Members made inputs. Unfortunately, the minutes of the 24th do not capture those inputs. I have requested that an addendum be made to those minutes. It then impacts on the minutes of the 31st and last week's minutes in terms of what we have adopted. The three sets of minutes will then not be considered because we started off the meeting of the 24th started off with serious recommendations which were made by the chair and by the members. Those recommendations would form the basis and the inputs which we will give to the strategic session. We also said that the committee had a prior strategic session and that those decisions had to be captured. Those are very important decisions. They have not been noted in the minutes of the 24th. On the 31st, I requested that it be included. It has still not been included. I would like it to be noted in today's minutes that we could not adopt the three sets of minutes because the corrections were not made. The corrections could be made in the form of an addendum, and the addendum to the minutes of the 24th should be adopted in our next meeting. Honorable members, I've also been requested to postpone Friday's meeting since members will be traveling for the oversight visit. The meeting for Friday would then not have a quorum. So I propose that, and I've taken the decision that Friday's meeting will be postponed. Do I have any comments on that? If none, we could now do the presentation by the Civilian Secretariat for Police. The Civilian Secretariat for Police.
I'm sorry, Chair.
Yes.
Oh, I couldn't unmute, so I'm not sure what's happening with my icons. I can't even raise my hand. If it's moved from Friday, it's postponed to when?
So the deliberations will then continue next week. We were supposed to start and continue with the deliberations on Friday. So if we do not have the deliberations on Friday and that meeting does not happen on Friday, we'll continue with the deliberations next week. So if we need an additional meeting next week, we'll then convene an additional meeting for next week, Friday. We must apply for the postponement of Friday's meeting. We should then accept as a committee that Friday's meeting will be postponed. Do you agree with that?
No, we agree, Chair.
Thank you very much. Mr. Amaru, we are ready for you. Our stakeholders are in the meeting, as I've welcomed them earlier. We appreciate your attendance, and we hope that the responses by the Civilian Secretariat would be useful to the meeting and to our stakeholders. We would like to engage with the stakeholders in a very comprehensive way, and we would like to the stakeholders to be present when the committee does its deliberations. Your inputs last week were extremely valuable. We've considered those inputs, given them to the Civilian Secretariat of Police, and this would then be their responses. Mr. Amaru, you could introduce the responses. Sorry, Mr. Amaru, could you please introduce your team?
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members and Colleagues. With me, I have Advocate Don Bell from our legislation team, Advocate Yolanda Grisinger from our legislation team, and Ms. Ayanda Tomana from the Office of the Secretary and the support staff. But Chairperson, I also want to indicate that we have representatives who worked with us from National Treasury, the FIC, SAPS, DERCO, and Office of the Chief State Law Advisor. We're also expecting someone from the Department of Justice to also join us. Then from our side, the person who's going to be leading the presentation is Advocate Yolanda Kritzinger, with your permission, Chairperson.
You may start the presentation.
Good morning, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, and also other participants. Today, I will, the purpose of my presentation today is to indicate that the Draft Protection of Constitutional Democracy Against Terrorist and Related Activities Amendment Bill 2022, in short called the Bok-Tatara Bill, was introduced to the Portfolio Committee on Police on the 31st of August 2022. Public hearings were held on the bill on the 7th of September, and presentations were made by AfriForum, the International Committee of the Red Cross, Sussex Terrorism and Extremism Network, and then also a written submission was received from the Banking Association of South Africa. There, the department and other role players that the Acting Secretary mentioned worked through the written submissions received from the public comments, and we've prepared a very detailed response document which we have circulated to the Secretariat of the Committee. This presentation here today is a summary of those detailed presentations, and it will also only concentrate on those provisions in the bill that have been challenged through the public submissions, and not responses to those provisions that were agreed to and supported by the public submissions. Chair, then I will first start with the submissions we received from AfriForum. As indicated when we introduced the bill, Clause 1 of the bill proposes the substitution, the deletion and insertion of certain definitions in Section 1 of the Act. If the person can just go back to slide 4, please. I'm on slide 4. Thank you. Now, Chair, AfriForum, let me start by saying when that particular definition was amended, the issue of any digital representation or perceived value, such as a cryptocurrency, were actually added to the definition of property. Now, AfriForum has indicated that this section was already overbroad and vague, and that the expansion thereof has exacerbated the problem. In response, we can say that the reason the definition was amended was to align it with definitions of the very same concept in the Prevention of Organized Crime Act, as well as in the Financial Intelligence Center Act. And these acts have to be implemented in conjunction with each other to address illicit financial flows related to terrorism. Chair, I just also want to mention to the chairperson and the committee that the Banking Association of South Africa has also made written submissions on this particular definition of property and the inclusion of crypto assets in the definition. The department, and particularly the FIC, found this input very valuable and is accepting the proposals. And how we will address it, I will indicate to the committee when I get to slide 19, where we go into the detailed submissions that were made by BASA. Chair, then, in terms of the definition of terrorist activity, it was indicated by the public comment that the addition of section 1B, Roman 4, which indicates the following words, can reasonably be regarded as being intended in whole or
recording
in part,
stopped.
Directly or indirectly, further the objects of any entity engaged in terrorist activity, it further complicates
recording
the
in progress
definition. It is further said that the words reasonably be regarded unacceptably introduces negligence as a form of mens rea. And Chair, I can just indicate that mens rea means the intention or knowledge of wrongdoing that constitutes parts of a crime as opposed to the action or conduct of the accused. And it was then said that that wording unacceptably introduces negligence as a form of mens rea for committing terrorist offenses. This is legally imprecise for the purposes of criminal law and is a common issue with anti-terrorism legislation globally. Now, Chair, the department has to indicate that this particular wording indicated by AfriForum, namely reasonably be regarded, has been part of the Principal Act since its adoption in 2004. And it refers to an act which is intended or can be reasonably regarded as intended. It has not been introduced in the bill only now. It is granted that there is no globally accepted definition of terrorism, but the South African Law Reform Commission has recommended definition of terrorism activity as opposed to a definition of terrorism. And the department has followed this advice, and we also used a model relevant, for example, of Canada. Next slide, please. Chairperson, Clause 3 proposes the insertion of Section 3A in the Principal Act, which provides for the prohibition of any publications with terrorist-related content, as well as a defense, therefore. Now, AfriForum has challenged this insertion of Section 3A, and it is questioned, and it says that such insertion violates, amongst others, the rights to freedom of expression, and that the state has not adequately explained such invasive measures. And it is not believed that Section 3 capital A will really address the obstacles that they are saying are being experienced, such as capacity, training, and lack of resources. Now, Chair, the media, and in particular electronic media and platforms, are extensively being used to recruit persons to join terrorist organizations or to commit terrorist acts. And it is therefore very necessary to address it in the bill. Any prosecution in terms of these provisions may only be instituted with the written authorization of the National Director of Public Prosecutions. Next slide, please. The relevant Section 3 capital A is based on the provisions of Chapter 11 in the United Kingdom Terrorism Act of 2006. Any person charged with committing an offence under this section may raise a defence in terms of Section 3, capital A, sub 5. These defences may include that the person did not know that the document contained information related to terrorism, or that the person's possession was for purposes of carrying out work as a journalist, or it was due to academic research being conducted. Next slide, please. Chair, Clause 5 seeks to insert Section 4, capital A in the Principal Act in order to provide for an offence in respect of an attempt to leave the Republic for the benefit of, at the direction of, or in association with a terrorist group. Now, the comment in terms of this insertion was that it is unjustifiable violation of the freedom of movement and an unnecessary duplication of a pre-existing offence. The department is saying that South African law criminalizes situations where persons abuse freedom of movement and utilizes the South African territory as a springboard to join terrorist organizations. I can also just say, in addition, Chairperson and committee members, that the United Nations Counterterrorism Executive Directorate, in its compliance report, also recommended that travel or attempted travel to another state for the purposes of the perpetration or for the planning or for the preparation or the participation in terrorist acts or the participation even in training must be criminalized. Next slide, please. Chair, then Clause 17 seeks to align the sentencing as laid down in Section 18 of the Principal Act with the severity of the offence, for example, the financing of terrorism. Now, the public comment has been to say that this amendment proposes severe increases in sentences for offences thereunder. The response is that this amendment relating to the penalties for terrorist financing offences is very much necessary to establish parity with equally serious offences of the Prevention of Organised Crime Act, such as the offence of money laundering. Next slide, please. Chair, Clause 18 expands on the ambit of and what may be contained in a freezing order, the making of ancillary orders, the publication of orders, the appointment of a curator ad litem, and interim orders. Now, the wording of reasonably be regarded is said to have introduced a form of negligence as sufficient intention of knowledge or wrongdoing for the purposes of criminal liability and is likely to lead to complex litigation. It should, however, be pointed out that the term used in the amendment is not reasonably grounds to believe, or is in fact reasonable grounds to believe and not reasonably regarded as stated in AfriForum's submission. Reasonable grounds to believe, which is in fact the correct wording in the bill, is within the context of this section, does not relate to criminal liability and therefore does not establish the intention of knowledge of wrongdoing. Instead, it sets an evidentiary. The standard is applied by a judge when the National Director of Public Prosecutions brings an application for a freezing order. The power is actually not exercised by a police official. Next slide, please. Next slide, please. A judge applies the standard to determine whether the state has proved the jurisdictional facts that are required for the granting of the freezing order. The standard is much lower than the standard for criminal prosecution, which is actually beyond reasonable doubt. The term reasonable grounds to believe is often used in legislation in respect of a discretion to be exercised by a judicial officer. For example, when a magistrate decides whether a search warrant should be issued in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act. Next slide, please. Chair, then Clause 20 seeks to insert Section 24A and also Section 24B. Now, Section 24A provides for the application for a decryption direction by an officer by the directorate in terms of Section 21 of the Regulation of Interception of Communications and Provision of Communication Related Information Act. Now, the submission has been to say that this insertion can lead to potential use of abuse as seen by RICO legislation. And it also, there's a potential to unjustifiably violate the right to privacy. Now, the response in terms of that is to say that Section 24A is only to be applied once the state has, in terms of law, seized computer equipment where there is already a suspicion that a crime had been committed and that it is necessary to obtain a decryption order. Such a decryption order can only be obtained through a designated judge in terms of RICO. It is, however, appreciated that the effectivity of this section is limited, but it is not always the dark web that is used in the recruitment of terrorists. Furthermore, if South Africa does not provide for this, it may lead to abuse from South Africa through the internet service providers to recruit terrorists. Therefore, Chair, it is necessary to revisit this Section 24A for it to specifically deal with decryption assistance and passwords of other access technology restrictions on electronic communication devices. And we will make reference to United Kingdom laws, for example, the United Kingdom Terrorist Act of 2026, when we revisit this particular clause. Next slide, please. Then if we get to clause 20, which deals with the insertion of section 24B, here I can just indicate that section 24B provides that a member of the directorate may apply to a competent court for an order to disable access to an internet or social media site with unlawful terrorism-related content. Now, this argues that this proposal will likely prove to be unenforceable, given that most of the content of the internet is hosted or disseminated by massive supranational national companies such as Meta, who act as secondary publishers, or alternatively not hosted on traceable servers at all, such as on the so-called dark web. And it's also said that the principle of the Audi Arthrum Partum doctrine, which is to hear the other side, and the right to be presumed innocent without any concomitant jurisdiction are being violated. To effectively enforce the order provided for in Section 24 of the Bill, the department is of the view that the assistance by electronic communication service providers are required, and that this section will also be revisited so that provision can be made for a similar provision as contained in Section 21 of the Cybercrimes Act, and therefore the bill will be revisited in this regard. Then, Chair, I come to the last input of AfriForum, which was the deletion of Section 26. It proposes in the schedule that the publication of resolutions of the United Nations Security Council related to entities linked to terrorism are noticed in the Gazette should be performed finance in terms of Financial Intelligence Center Act. The submission of the designations by the UN Security Council is at most for the information purposes of Parliament, and Parliament cannot reject or amend resolutions or listings of the United Nations Security Council. The implementation of designations following the adoption of resolutions by the United Nations Security Council is an executive function. Chair, we can also just mention that the General Law Anti-Money Laundering and Combating Terrorism Amendment Bill was recently also introduced in Parliament and provides in effect that notices that relate to the adoption of resolution of the UN Security Council and subsequent designations and delistings of entities under those resolutions will be issued by the Director of the Financial Intelligence Center. And therefore, there is indeed a need to align what is said in the book, what is contained in the General Law Amendment Bill. So that alignment will be done. Then we proceed to the comments received from the International Committee Cross. In the bill, we propose the repeal of Section 1.4 of the Principal Act. Now, the International Committee of the Red Cross proposes the retention of this section, and they refer to it also as the International Humanitarian Law Savings Clause. They also propose a humanitarian exemption clause, and they say that states should ensure that counterterrorism legislation does not jeopardize humanitarian action. A humanitarian exemption clause will protect impartial humanitarian action carried out by trusted humanitarian and impartial organizations. In response, the department can say that the repeal of Section 1.4 must really be understood in the context of South Africa's obligations under international law. The Pokthatara must be aligned to the Geneva Conventions Act 2012 and Protocol 1 and 2 relating to the protections of victims of international armed conflicts and non-international armed conflicts, respectively. Next slide, please. Protocol 1, additional to the Geneva Convention, applies to the type of armed conflicts mentioned in Section 1.4 of the Principal Act. The ICRC may offer its services in an armed conflict or during a legitimate liberation struggle or during an international or non-international armed conflict, and is exempted from punishment for carrying out of medical activities compatible with medical ethics. Should the ICRC be exempted through the Pokthatara Act, it affects the consideration of the particular circumstances when the ICRC offers its assistance. Protocol 2 explicitly requires the consent of the state when in relief actions, providing a standing at this consent requirement, and therefore the inclusion of an exemption clause as proposed by the ICRC is not supported by the department chair. Then we get to the next slide, which is the input we've received from the Sussex Terrorism and Extremism Network. Clause 2 that seeks to amend Section 3 of the Act, and more specifically the insertion of Section 3.4, where a person commits an offence if he or she receives training and is aware that such training is connected with terrorism, should be further improved to ensure that terrorist training itself is an offence. In its current form, it can be interpreted that only training for a specific act is criminalized, this activity was planned. Terrorist training can also occur online or through social media, and the proposal is therefore made that online training also be addressed. Chair, this input from Stern was very helpful, and the department accepts these comments, and the necessary amendments to Section 3 and Section 3.4 will be affected to provide that online training also be included, and not only the receipt of training, but also the provision of training in terrorist activities. Chair, now we come to the written submissions that were received from Banking Association of South Africa. In short, it will be mentioned as BASA. As I mentioned when I addressed the inputs from AfriForum, I also indicated that BASA also made a comment regarding the definition of property. And the comment indicated that the definition of property in the form prior to its proposed amendments is already an all-encompassing definition and would include any digital representation of perceived value, which would include crypto assets, fiat currency, and securities. It recommends the deletion of the insertion that has been made into the definition of property, or alternatively, cross-reference the definition of crypto asset as proposed in Section 1 of the Financial Intelligence Center Act. Chair, the department, in response here to says that the crypto assets are neither money, movable or immovable property, or a corporeal thing. It's therefore important for us to still create legal certainty that crypto assets are included in the concept of property as defined in the Principal Act. Therefore, we will remain, we propose that we remain with the word crypto assets in the definition of property, but that under the definition section of the Principal Act, we will insert a definition of crypto asset that will be in line with other legislation as well. Next slide, please. Chair, the definition of electronic communication service providers, BASA requested for clarification on whether this particular section is limited to independent service providers that operate such service as a sole service, or is it also applicable where the service is offered in collaboration with a primary service provider? And then we were also requested to provide clarity on what is meant by who is deemed to be licensed. In terms of question one, we respond as follows. The definition applies to a person who provides an electronic communication service in terms of an individual license, a class license, a license exemption, and in terms of any other law that deems such a person to be licensed to provide an electronic communication service. Next slide, please. The expression deemed to be licensed refers to an electronic communication service provider contemplated in the ECA, or a person who is deemed to be licensed in terms of any other law to provide an electronic communications service. Whether the definition of electronic communication service provider extends to a so-called mobile virtual network operator will be determined whether such a person is licensed, exempted to be licensed, or deemed to be licensed. Next slide, please. It is suggested that it must be clear that an entity that has been removed from a resolution of the UN Security Council and announced as such by the Minister of Finance in a notice and subsequent notice by the Director of the Financial Intelligence Center will not be considered as an entity any longer. Then secondly, BASA is saying that in accordance with the bill, the UN Security Council resolutions, which include financial sanctions, must be published by the Minister of Finance in terms of the Financial Intelligence Center Act, not having any discretion to publish or not. In the light of this, the purpose of Section 26 capital A 3A to B is then questioned, as any such notice contemplated in these sections may only be done pursuant to a notice as gazetted under Section 26 A 1. The intention hereof would, for example, never to amend the initial UN Security Council resolution. Chair, in response to this, the department is saying that the application of the provisions of the Financial Intelligence Center Act related to targeted financial sanctions to an entity is determined by the details of the notices of the director FIC and includes a notice by the director that a designation by the UN Security Council no longer applies to an entity. In other words, has been delisted as an entity by the United Nations Security Council. It has indeed been noted that there is a conflict between Clause 25 of the General Laws Amendment Bill that seeks to delete the fact that the Minister of Finance will announce the adoption of resolutions by the UN Security Council in the Gazette. And it now provides that the Director FIC will publish such notice in the Gazette with the Bogdatara Bill. It is still, they are still referenced, and therefore they will definitely be a need to align the Bogdatara Bill with the General Laws Amendment Bill, and that these clauses will have to be amended to ensure the alignment of the two pieces of legislation. Chair, then we get to BASA's input regarding the insertion of Section 3, capital A, 2D. BASA is saying that this will prove difficult for electronic communication service provider as the offence lies in the wording enables them to obtain, whereas such a provider may only provide the access mechanism but has no control over that what content is in fact assessed through its service. It is proposed that the section be deleted or amended, or if none of these proposals are acceptable, that the defenses mentioned in clause 3 capital A5 be amended to also apply to section 3 capital A2D. The department has noted these comments and they are accepted, but there is in fact no necessity to amend the clause in the bill referenced as clause 3 capital A5, as the defenses applicable in the clause finds application to the entire section 3A in the bill and therefore includes section 3A2D. Next slide, please. Chair, then the last comment by BASA was in relation to the insertion of section 12.9. The creation of the obligation to comply with this section, notwithstanding the obligation to comply with other legislation, creates a hierarchy of legal obligations that are unsubstantiated. Chair, the department in response here to disagrees with the addition, that the addition of section 12.9 creates a hierarchy of reporting obligations. The proposed section 12.9 is derived from a similar provision in section 37.1 of the Financial Intelligence Center Act. There's no reason why the reporting duty and the exclusion of privilege in the Pukatara Act should differ from what is contained in the Financial Intelligence Center Act. Chair, this concludes my presentation. I thank you, Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you, Chairperson. That will be our presentation.
Chairperson? Colleagues, can anybody hear me?
I can hear you, Andrew.
I can hear you. Sorry. I'm having load shedding. Colleagues, if I am out and completely out, could I ask the WIP to assist me, please? I just started with load shedding now. Honorable colleagues, we then have the presentation. Would you like to again first, Mr. Amaro, I heard your last, comments. I'm going to put it to the members for questions first before we start the deliberations. So this is now for matters of clarity before we start the deliberations. Members who have given all those institutions who have given their comments will first take the questions for clarity. You may raise your hands now. Matters for clarity. That was quite a comprehensive response. Thank you, Mr. Amaro. However, it was in quite detail. It was quite complex. And we may have matters for clarity. Clarity seeking questions now.
Chair, is this from members as well?
No, this is only for members now. The interaction with the stakeholders happens after the members interact. So you have an opportunity now for clarity seeking questions, and then we'll start our deliberations. Once we've started our deliberations, we'll hand back to the stakeholders. Honorable Whitfield.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Chair, I just have a couple of questions. You are correct that this is an incredibly complex and technical bill, pulling all sorts of different pieces of legislation together, as well as international standards and conventions. And there is generally, I think, across the board support for the intention of the legislation or the amendments to give effect to developments in international law. I don't believe that was disputed by any of the public comments, so that's a good start. However, there were a number of comments which the department does not agree with, as they're entitled to. And I do think that we must recognize that Parliament has passed legislation in the past, even with departmental concurrence, that has been found wanting in different departments. And this committee must really apply our minds very carefully to the public comments as well as the departmental comments. But Chair, I would very much like to understand, and perhaps I've missed it, and so perhaps this is a question just to be reminded for the committee's purposes. The second intention of the bill is to give effect to certain constitutional court judgments. If we could just get a recap on which judgments those were and a brief explanation so that we are fully up to speed. And I apologize if this requires repeating prior information, I just couldn't recall. So that is the first question, Chair. And then the second question deals with the departmental comment or response on page, or the pages in the Word document are not numbered, but clause 3, new section 3A, there is a response to the insertion of clause 3A where the department says the media and in particular electronic media and platforms are being used extensively to recruit persons to join terrorist organizations or to commit terrorist acts. Now, Chairperson, that statement is not, that I can see, qualified by any reference to a case study example or any sort of evidence. I accept that it's a convenient platform to recruit and perhaps to commit terrorist activities. But if we could get an indication from the department of some examples that has led them to this conclusion as justification for the insertion of new clause 3A. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Whitfield. Colleagues, I do not see any hands, any further hands. The secretary, could you respond or indicate who will respond to Honorable Whitfield? You are correct, Honorable Whitfield, acting secretary for police.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. The first question will be responded by us, Advocate Grisinger. Then the second one will request the colleague from FIC, that is the one that deals with clause 3, subsection 3, capital A, will be responded by a colleague from FIC.
You may continue.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair. Yeah, there hasn't been much convictions in terms of the Principal Act in respect of terrorism-related activities. But the examples that we have mentioned when we introduced the bill were those of the Tulsi twins who pleaded guilty of trying to leave South Africa, two members of the National Christian Resistance Movement who were plotting the murder of Black people as well as overthrowing the government. And then there was the Constitutional Court matter of Henry Oka, which was a citizen of Nigeria that was charged with 13 counts related to terrorism under the Pokta Tara. And these charges related to car bombings detonated successively and respectively in Nigeria, further double car bombing in Abuja, Nigeria, I think, killing 9 people. So this trial led to an unsuccessful constitutional challenge, in fact, of the jurisdictional provisions in the Act. But the Constitutional Court then advised that the definition of specified offense should just be re-looked at to make it more understandable. So the Constitutional Court matter of Henry Oka definitely had an impact on the bill, where there were amendments made to the definition of specified offense to make it more clear as per the guidance given by the Constitutional Court in that court matter. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, honorable members. The WIP is also experiencing load shedding. We'll soldier on. I will be extremely strict with time and inputs because we are not rushing through the amendment bill. And I would rather on the side of caution to have sufficient time and then to ensure that all members and the public are reasonably happy with the outcome. Of course, we will not be able to please all the stakeholders, but we could attempt to have a very good outcome and firstly process outcome and what we approve. Honorable members, I'll now take an opportunity for deliberations by the committee. Honorable Whitfield, is your hand up again for the deliberations?
Yes, please, Chair.
Honorable Whitfield, I note any further hands? Any further hands? Honorable Whitfield, you may start.
Thank you very much, Chair. Chairperson, I think that South Africans at large are quite right to be concerned when any legislation comes before Parliament that gives the state increased powers, there is reason for skepticism. And we've seen the powers of the state abused during lockdown. We've seen what the police are capable of in the current environment. And we have seen through reports from the Independent Police Investigative Directorate how police abuse spiked during lockdown when the state was given unprecedented powers over the freedoms of citizens. And so it is not unreasonable for South Africans to be concerned about some of the amendments that may lead to arbitrary abuse. And as the previous speaker from the Civilian Secretariat indicated, that the Constitutional Court previously advised that certain definitions should be reviewed or re-looked at. And so my question, Chair, is, if I may, just in terms of the number of comments that were made regarding the vagueness or looseness of definitions contained in the bill, in the amendment bill, is it the Civilian Secretariat of Police's position, therefore, that none of those arguments hold any water, that all the definitions that are contained in the amendment bill are that they are satisfied with those definitions and that they are satisfied that they are beyond reproach, even by a constitutional court? Thank you, Chair.
Any further comments? I do not note any further hands. Civilian Secretariat, Acting Secretary, you may indicate who will respond.
Chairperson, Ms. Krizinga, Advocate Krizinga will respond and will also give an opportunity, if allowed, to the representative from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor.
You may.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, as I summarized in the presentation, under the comments that we considered from AfriForum and the Banking Association of South Africa, where they had made a comment specifically on the definition of property. The department has indicated that we take note of those comments, but we still are of the opinion that the issue about virtual assets should be made part of the definition of property. But we will relook at that definition to strengthen it and to make it more easily interpretable. And we will remain with the word crypto assets in the definition of property, but we will insert a new definition into the bill that specifically defines crypto assets. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, the State Law Advisor.
Yes, good morning, Chair and honorable members. Chair, it is would be more appropriate for the department to respond to to issues of vagueness in respect of definitions. But I am in agreement with the advocate who just responded, Chair, but our role in the committee in respect of the processing of bills is generally to assist the committee in respect of constitutional issues as well as amendments which the committee wishes to bring to the bill. So that will be in the form of the A list, which we will work closely with the parliamentary legal advisor. But Chair, I have nothing further to add in that regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Any further comments? The whip is back. Any further comments from the committee? Could we now get an indication, Nicolette? Could you just indicate who's here from the side of the stakeholders? Those who gave inputs, the participants?
Hi, good morning, Honourable Chair, Honourable Members. Chairperson, I see all the stakeholders are here. I know Dr. Skuman is here. Yes, Chair, I see him only for now.
Dr. Skuman, are you with us? You may address the committee now.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to pose a question to the Secretariat. I had two further points in my submission that they did not address in their presentation. And the one was around broadening the definition of legitimate defense in Section 3A. And I had suggested that the legitimate defense should be extended from academic research and journalism to say something along the lines of legitimate activities in the public interest, such as academic research and journalism. So I just wanted to hear the Secretariat's thoughts on that. And then the second point was around my suggestion around the removal of terrorist motive in the definition of terrorist activity. I understand that the Secretariat has looked at the Canadian law for this, but I would emphasize that we have slightly different challenges in South Africa. And I think we need to consider the local challenges that we have in Africa in terms of hybrid groups that engage in organized crime alongside their activities to induce terror. And I've previously mentioned the example of narco-terrorism, which does not have an ideological motive. And so I would like to hear the Secretariat's thoughts just on those two points. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Dr. Skuman. Mr. Amaru. We have Treasury in our meeting as well. We'll give them an opportunity to address the committee if they so wish. Acting Secretary.
Chairperson, from my side, I would just like to respond to the issue about the removal of the motive requirement from the definition of terrorist activity. Chairperson and the committee will remember that in the beginning of the presentation, I mentioned that we are only giving responses to those bill provisions in the bill and comments that were challenged. This particular one that Dr. Skuman is referring to was raised in the initial comments when the bill was published for public comments last year as well. And the department then at that time took that comment into account. And then, in fact, the definition of terrorist activity was amended to delete the motive requirement. So that has been addressed previously. I'm not so sure if Advocate Saul Robertson might be in a position, Section 3, Capital A.
Morning, Saul Robertson from the Department of Justice. I did give inputs in respect of the bill. Regarding Section 3A, the so-called defences, one must remember in terms of South African law, unlawfulness is a prerequisite for criminal liability. So the state must in effect prove that there is no legitimate defence against the conduct that's being criminalised in terms of a legislative division. Although the defence is provided for in Section 3A list specific offences, it's my submission that other defences or recognised grounds on which unlawfulness may be excluded will always be applicable in addition to what is specifically stated as a defence against the criminalisation of certain conduct. So my submission is, although the bill mentions specific defences, it does not exclude other grounds of justifications that may be raised in respect of prohibited conduct. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that input. Could we now ask for Treasury? And then I also note Mr. Peter Smith from the Financial Intelligence Center. Treasury, you have an opportunity to give your input if you so wish.
Thank you, Chair. I'm joined on the call by our legal representative as well. Chair, we just by way of introduction, I'm Wheeler Davidson from the National Treasury. Chair, we don't have a great deal to add, except to say that we really support the work the committee is doing and the content of the bill, and appreciate the committee's consideration on the bill in line with our parallel work happening in the Standing Committee of Finance to address deficiencies identified in the mutual the FATF mutual evaluation and to avoid South Africa being grey listed. So we certainly appreciate your efforts, Chair, and we will continue, I guess, working with the department to clarify and align smaller technical issues like those relating to crypto assets. But let me stop there, Chair, and thanks again.
Honorable Whitfield, does that assist your comments or questions which you made earlier, right at the start of the process? I then asked Treasury to join the meeting.
Honorable Thank you Whitfield. Very much. Thank you very much, Chair, and thank you very much to Mr. Davidson from National Treasury. I think that my original question was really surrounding the complex and technical nature of the bill and the timeline for us to conclude the bill appeared to be extremely urgent. And my question was, in order for the committee to understand this urgency, whether and perhaps the opportunity is now, Treasury could indicate whether this legislation is a fundamental component of our effort to prevent South Africa from being grey listed, and perhaps put another way, if this legislation is not passed through Parliament in this term of Parliament, when I say term, this quarter, and if it is only dealt with next year, would that pose a problem or increased risk to South Africa being grey-listed? I'd really appreciate an answer to that question, Chair. I think it would drive a sense of urgency behind the committee's work as well, depending on the answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Whitfield. Thank you to Treasury. You were invited precisely to assist us. Mr. Davidson.
Thank you, Chair, and I will also ask my colleague from the FIC to come in on this point as well. But to address the Honourable Whitfield's question, the short answer to that question is yes. The aspects that are being dealt with in the POCTA-TARA bill are critical in our efforts to address what we call technical compliance deficiencies. So just to take a step back, Honourable Whitfield, the shortcomings that were identified in the mutual evaluation fall sort of under two aspects. One aspect is something that we call technical compliance that requires the updating of legislation and regulation to make sure that we have the legal framework to address the deficiencies identified. And the other aspect is something that the FATF call effectiveness. Now, the effectiveness pillar is more of a subjective measure that measures how well the system is, how effective the system is in addressing risks relating to money laundering and countering financing of terrorism. What we're dealing with right now in Parliament through the amendments being facilitated through the Standing Committee of Finance, which amend five pieces of legislation and as well as the pieces of the parts that are being considered in this committee, all those represent technical compliance deficiencies that need to be addressed. On timelines, Honourable Whitfield, it is absolutely imperative that we have the technical compliance aspects approved in Parliament and signed into law. Indeed, FATF will only consider them once they are sort of signed into law. So we are really up against it from a timing perspective. Let me just, through you, Chair, and with your permission, Honourable Whitfield, just ask the FIC to provide any sort of additional details where I may have gotten shortcut the response. So Peter, I understand that you're on the call.
Certainly, the FIC, Mr. Peter Smith, has been invited. You may address the committee now. Thank you very much, Mr. Davidson. Mr. Smith?
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Honourable Members, good morning. Mr. Davidson had summed it up very well. There are specific amendments included in the POCTA-TARA Amendment Bill that are directly linked to findings from the mutual evaluation report. These relate specifically to the amendments in Section 4 relating to the terrorist financing offences and Sections 23 and 25 of the POCTA-TARA Act that deal with the freezing orders and the implementation of financial sanctions from the UN Security Council. And those are also impacted by the definition of terrorist activity, which is also being amended, or the proposed amendments are included in this bill. So all of those form a package of amendments that are fundamental to addressing directly some of the findings in the mutual evaluation report, where our legal framework to deal with terror financing was found to fall short of what the international standards require of us. The Vukile has addressed the timing factor. The next consideration of our efforts to address these findings, to get this bill together with the General Laws Amendment Bill that was mentioned already, will be considered by the FATF in January next year. So we have to submit our written material to the FATF Secretariat in the course of November. They will analyze the material, and we will then have a meeting with the review team in January next year to discuss the assessment of what we have been busy with for the past few months. And as Mr. Davidson had indicated, the FATF will only consider that we have addressed a finding that relates to amendment of legislation if the legislation, the revised legislation, is actually in force. So They will consider drafts and say whether our draft is in going in the right direction, but they will not acknowledge that as an action to address a finding in an evaluation until that legislation is in force. So that is where the time pressure comes from for us to deliver legislation that could address these findings and to bring that legislation into operation with enough time left for the FATF to then analyze the information among a team of our peers, members from other FATF member countries, who will then be analyzing that new legislation and advise whether they believe we've now addressed the shortcomings that were identified in the report. That review process in and of itself takes some time because obviously the reviewers who are looking at the legislation are not necessarily experts in South African law and understand the context of the principles of our law, things such as the common law principles of unlawfulness that Mr. Roberts had explained just now. So there will be a requirement for us to engage with those reviewers over time and explain the impact of the provisions as well. So it's not simply a matter of us delivering the legislation and they acknowledging that the legislation is in place now and then concluding that the specific deficiencies have been addressed. So that is, in a nutshell, how the assessment process works and how we are currently engaging with a follow-up process to correct the findings from the Mitch evaluation report. We believe those findings are justified. We're not taking any issue with those, and that's why we have brought these amendments into our legislation and are proposing them to Parliament through this process of the bill. And why we are also working very closely with the Civilian Secretariat on the technical detail of those particular amendments that relate to the findings of the FATF. I'll be happy to provide further clarification if necessary. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chairperson. Is the committee whip online? Can somebody hear me?
We can hear you.
Yes. Honorable Whitford, yes. I don't know whether the chairperson, I see she's a she's connected, but I don't know what's the problem. I see your hand, Honorable Whitfield. Maybe continue. I'll check.
Thank you. All right. Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Mr. Smith. And it may be a redundant question, but I'll ask it nonetheless. As you've been working closely with the Civilian Secretariat for Police, I presume on the sort of financial technical elements of the bill, I'm not clear whether, you know, you've worked on all the amendments or are approving of all of the amendments. I presume that is the case. But in order to satisfy the requirements to avoid or to give us the best chance of being avoided grey listing, apologies, my tongue is twisted. Do you believe that every single amendment is necessary? Because you identified in reference a few amendments that were important, but do you believe every single amendment is necessary in order for us to avoid grey listing? If the purpose of the urgency of this bill passing through Parliament is to give us the best chance of avoid grey listing, I'm just curious to know whether every single amendment is absolutely critically fundamental to that purpose, or whether the committee, should it have concerns over certain amendments, be able to separate those from the necessary technical amendments to align us to international standards to satisfy the concerns flagged in that grey listing process. I trust that's clear. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Davidson or Mr. Smith? Anyone who can respond?
Okay, maybe I can come in quickly. This is Peter Smith speaking. I think to Honourable Whitfield's question, not every single amendment that is proposed in this bill relate to the findings of the FATF in the niche evaluation. That is not to say that those amendments are not all equally important and urgent. Some of them, and the Civilian Secretariat have also pointed this out in responses to some of the comments, relate to findings from other international organizations, for instance, the Counter-Terrorism Executive Directorate of the UN Security Council, who have also undertaken a compliance visit to South Africa and have made a separate set of findings in relation to our anti-terrorism legislation. And the focus of the CTET, the Counter-Terrorism Executive Directorate, is wider than just terrorist financing. It looks more broadly at the concept of terrorism, extremism, etc. And so that some of those amendments are also necessary to address those findings, not specifically terrorist financing, which is the FATS focus. So our engagement with the Civilian Secretariat has been to address some of the findings relating to the FATF process. And the reason why we have some urgency in this is because the FATF itself, is different from other bodies, have a follow-up mechanism where they monitor how countries follow up and when they follow up and where they apply peer pressure to countries through this grey listing process to follow up on findings that come out of niche evaluation reports. That is slightly different from how other bodies carry out assessments and what happens with the results of the assessments. But that does not necessarily mean that the amendments that are necessary to address those findings are not equally important. And also to make sure that our counterterrorism legal framework, including terror financing, is robust enough to ensure that South Africa is not a haven for terrorist activity or support for terrorist organizations. And that comes from some of the findings from the Constitutional Court judgments, some of the findings in relation to the OCOP case, et cetera. So there are different reasons for the need to bring these amendments. Unfortunately, I cannot comment on whether all those reasons are equally cogent or important. But from our perspective, this is certainly a combined package of legislation that we require to have a strong and robust counterterrorism legal framework, which enables us to also then in future demonstrate a better effectiveness. The second aspect that Mr. Robert just touched on, that we're able to demonstrate a better effectiveness in combating terrorism and how we apply our counter-terror financing means to combat terrorism more generally. So I think that needs to be understood as the context for why that we have a package of amendments that are before the committee at this point. I don't know if the Civilian Secretariat has anything further to add to that. Thank you, Mr. Chair, Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Smith. I see Honorable Whitfield is satisfied, but I don't know whether Secretariat, did you want to add, or any other rep of the institution would want to say something?
From our side, Chair, we don't want to add anything. I think the colleagues from FIC and National Treasury have covered everything.
Okay. Honorable Marekwa.
Thank you, Chairperson. Am I audible?
Yes, you are.
Morning, Chair.
You are audible, Honorable Marekwa. Continue.
Can you hear me?
Can you hear me? Continue.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. No, I was just listening. You can hear me. I was just listening to the comments and the clarities that have been given, and maybe just also to check that on the issue I hear honorable member asking about the issue of grey listing and the feedback that has been given to him, that also I want to also check with the presenter that the latter speaker just before I came in, that I believe that to avoid being relisted, also we as a committee or participants in this platform, in particularly on the matters that is under discussion, it's also important that it will also mean that we do work in a way that whatever we do, not rushing over issues because we want to avoid being graylisted, but making sure that whatever we will finally agree upon or conclude as this committee and all participants here, that whatever we will be concluding on and submitting for further engagements on at another level, that is work that will not come back to us. So I think as much as we find we might seem as if we are under pressure because we don't want to be graylisted, but I want to also add to say that it is very critical that as this committee, we do work in the best of our ability and make sure that whatever outcome or output that we will present to the next structure for finalization, it's not gonna bounce back to us and will be seen as having done hush-hush work over these issues, and make sure that we really will all be happy with the outcome. So I just wanna maybe make that input to say that grey listing, we cannot push us to pressure and make hush-hush decisions. So I think as a country also, it is expected of us, as much as we're in line with the laws and conventions of international conventions, we are having challenges that we really need to look closely at as a country, and making sure that our input also will be able to address whatever is happening in our country, be it terrorism, be it in many forms where it might find itself, whether media on the social platform, media platforms, or on the all forms. Let me say just terrorism coming from through all forms, because it is clear mentioned that people can be trained whether online and otherwise. So I think we need to really look closely on the issues affecting us as a country, because our challenges might be different, not that much from other countries, but we need to have solutions and laws that really will also assist us as a country, not undermining, but in the main taking our laws in to be in line with what the convention, international conventions are saying. But it's important that what we come out with here must not come back to us for us to redo what we are busy doing now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honorable Marekwa. Definitely, we need to do our work diligently so that the product we produce can stand the test of time. I don't see any other hands. I take members are well covered. I'm not sure about stakeholders, especially those who made public submissions. I guess they are also covered all the issues raised were responded to. They may not be happy with one or two, but I think the secretariat, the department, has responded to all of them. I see the hand of Paola.
Yes, good morning, honorable members. It's Paola Furgione. I'm legal advisor at the International Committee of the Red Cross at our headquarters in Geneva. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to participate in this session. I heard your concerns regarding our submissions. I would have some counter proposals, and I was wondering whether I can share with you these counter proposals now that might address your concerns or at a later stage during this session. Thank you.
I think send them to our secretariat, because the procedure is that members must have whatever submission well in advance. If we don't have your submission in advance and you submit it now, it might be interpreted as an ambush. But send it to our secretary and they will process it for the benefit of the committee.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yes. Mr. Amaru, are you fine?
Yes, we are fine, Chairperson.
Okay. The Chairperson is still out of the meeting because of connectivity problems. I'm going to move towards closing the meeting. I think the next step is we will have to adopt the report, which contains the submissions from the public. And then as part of the process, send our submissions to Parliamentary Legal Services. And they will advise us once they are happy, and we are also happy as a committee. The matter will then be presented before the parliament, so that ultimately it can be sent to the president. But for today, I guess everyone is happy with what we're here to discuss. I don't see any hand. And if there's any response, like I said, it must be sent to our secretariat so that we're able to process it thoroughly. If there's nothing more, I'm not sure whether this is the only item we're adjourning the meeting, or is there any other item? Babalwa? Is this the last item, or do we still have another item?
Hello, if we do have another item, the committee will start with the deliberations on the bill.
Okay, it's not what we have been doing.
They were responding to questions on the public submissions web.
All right. Can I check whether members are having something to say with regard to that? Honorable Whitfield.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you to everybody who responded, from the Department of Treasury to the FIC and others. I just wanted to, I think it's important that either yourself or the Chairperson set out your expectations on what format precisely we will follow in terms of deliberating on the bill. But I would just say, Chairperson, that the International Committee for the Red Cross has already indicated that they would like to make an alternative proposal or variation in their submission to the Civilian Secretariat. And I think that if we're going to deliberate on the bill and all submissions, that we should have the most current information available. I don't want to unnecessarily delay this process, but I also don't want us to have to come back and start from scratch should that submission be of such a nature that it requires us to review our deliberations a second time. So really, it's just a case of format and procedure, Chair, and we are in your capable hands in the absence of the chairperson of the committee. But we can go through it clause by clause if that's the purpose of deliberating on the bill. But it's entirely up to you. I'm prepared to go either way.
What I get from you, Honorable Woodfield, if I'm correct, is that we still give an opportunity, maybe a week or so. Those who might want to make submission, like the like on Mr. like Ms. Paola has said, and then when we have everything, we're then able to debate the bill. Is that what you are suggesting?
Yes, Chairperson. I've indicated that I'm happy to proceed if you are comfortable. I know that you've been thrown at the deep end at the moment, but I'm happy to proceed with our deliberations. I believe we've had some discussions. Not all members have participated, which does concern me insofar as whether members are satisfied or have sufficiently appraised themselves of the submissions and the responses. So perhaps for the committee's purpose, it would be good to receive the information via the Civilian Secretariat from the International Red Cross, and also to give members perhaps some more time to consider everything that was discussed this morning and sent to us in the last week. So I would say that we try to deal with the deliberations next week, but I'm in the committee's hands, Chair. That's not a decision. It's above my pay grade, if I can put it that way. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Honourable Whitfield. I understand you. Honourable Shembeni, then Nicolette, you'll come in.
Thank you, Honourable Whip. I just wanted to support the statement from Honourable Whitfield of going clause by clause so that we have a better understanding of the bill. Thank you very much.
Okay, but by after a week when we got all the submissions, okay.
That's correct.
Okay, Nicolette, I saw your hand.
Thank you. Well, thank you, Honorable Work. I think the additional submission will go to the Civilian Secretariat again for response in next week's meeting. And Chair, I do think it's wise to then rather start clause by clause next week during deliberations. I think members had quite a lot of information today to digest, and I think that's a good idea, Chair.
Okay, thanks very much. I think Honorable Whitfield suggested Honorable Shembeni seconded, and the advice we get from our content advisor is that since there is an indication that there'll be more information, which will come to us through the secretariat, and next week we'll get what is it, that information, we deliberate on it, and then we continue with our deliberation on clause by clause. Secretariat, Police Secretariat, are you with us?
Yes, we are, Chairperson. Once we receive a communication from the secretariat for the committee, then we will work on those additional comments from the Red Cross and respond accordingly.
Okay. Then that means that for today, we are done. Is that my understanding? We will wait for the submissions to Police Secretariat, then next week they will present what they have received, then from there we'll take it clause by clause. And it is in the meantime, members can look at what we received today so that they are ready for when we start deliberations. Am I with you, members?
Yes, Chair.
Yes, Chair.
All right, then it means, I see members are agreeing with me. Then it means for today, we'll not deliberate, we'll not get into deliberations until that process is done by next week. Is there any other item? You'll pardon me, I was kicked out at some stage. I lost the debate. I may not be sure whether these are the only items or we have another item. Babalwa?
We don't have another item, Whip.
Okay. Then thanks very much. It means this will be the end of our meeting today. Let's adjourn the meeting and we'll meet again next week. Police Secretariat will do what it's supposed to do. the Red Cross, as they have indicated, they will make sure that they submit, and then we interact with what they have submitted and the response to what they have submitted by the department next week. Then when we are fine, we can then get into deliberations, especially clause by clause. The meeting is adjourned. Thanks very much to everybody for coming and joining our meeting. It was nice. Thanks very much.